This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Second and 10 coming up here, Tony.
Well, my mic works again, so I can talk. This works out perfect. I was saying such good stuff on that play earlier, Jim. It was fantastic.
First Super Bowl for Tony Romo, and it seemed like he was enjoying himself. That's kind of half of his bit, is he's not some stuffy professor presiding over things. He's a former player and a fan, and I thought it translated very nicely in a broadcast that needed it. It was not a not a particularly joyful game, and it was up to them to bring some of that on top, and I thought they did. Richard Deitch is a media critic, among other things. He of the Fan 590 in Toronto and The Athletic. You find him on Twitter, at Richard Deitch. He joins the Bernstein and McKnight show. Richard, how are you?
Well, you don't want it was a defensive gem. It's the way football used to be played, with two defensive-oriented teams lining up together in a defensive battle. Yeah, that was a rough one to watch. But as I wrote today, and as I certainly said on Twitter, I thought Romo and Nance really, really, very early on, had a great handle on the broadcast, in that it was a broadcast worthy of being humorous, at times sort of mock enthusiasm. They, you know, I thought they were on the ball, and even in sort of just making fun of the punts, making fun of the fact that a special teams player may win the MVP. I thought they had a very good broadcast for a game that was really very, very hard to watch.
Richard, just shooting from the hip a little bit, what would you attribute the low ratings of the Super Bowl toward more than anything else? I'm sure it's a soup of a lot of different things, but it's the, I guess, lowest rated Super Bowl since the Steelers-Cardinals in 09.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think, you know, it's always hard to make these guesses because, you know, at the end of the day, you really don't know exactly. But if I had to guess, the game itself was not a good game. So you got no word of mouth on, you know, hey, like, check this game out. You know, I was going to remember, 150 million Americans aren't watching this game. So, you know, word of mouth, you may get more people heading to the screen if it's an incredible fourth quarter. They had none of that. This game had absolutely no word of mouth, no buzz during the game because it was bad. I think the Los Angeles market, and I wrote this before the game, is a bit of a misnomer at the moment. It's the second biggest media market in the country based on households, for sure. But that fan base really is not very big for the Rams in L.A. And you're also talking about a city and a state where there is so much to do, given just the beautiful weather and just the sort of entertainment choices that you can have away from watching TV, that market doesn't deliver. And so while household-wise, L.A. should be a monster, a juggernaut, it's not. It's the exact opposite. Then factor in the fact that the Rams have alienated one city, St. Louis, where fans are going to actively tune out and not watch the game. So you're losing a top 30 market there, at least in terms of over-indexing. And then finally, New Orleans set a record low for whatever it was, 10 or 15 years. So Saints fans were so pissed off, and understandably so, that they almost had their own sort of little boycott in terms of not watching the game. Finally, last one, and somebody probably could check it better than me, but if I'm correct about this, the weather on Sunday was progressively better than it was the previous couple of days. I'm not saying it was warm everywhere, but you guys know this in Chicago, and I certainly know this in Toronto. We didn't have the crazy freezing below zero weather on Sunday that we did a couple of days ago, and I think there probably were some people who just decided to go outside and enjoy much better weather than being forced to stay inside because they couldn't go out. So I think, you know, all those factors. I'm not a big believer in Patriots fatigue, because if you look at the history of the Patriots ratings in Super Bowls, they've been pretty good. So it may be a minor factor, but I think the other factors are bigger.
Tracy Wolfson got caught up in a scary storm of humanity immediately after the game, and it seemed like the truck was really in a no-win position there, and maybe made the
the better alternative move of just stay with the live television rather than try to time it and try to game it somehow when there was so much uncertainty going on. Is that how you read the situation when she's down there and they go to her, the producer's saying, you know, we don't have him, but you're hearing him and you're seeing something very real that's happening. Is it just one of those live TV things?
It reminded me, was it one of you guys who thought that it wasn't the right call to stay? Or was that, I feel like somebody from your station added me last night. I apologize if I'm wrong about that. I like it. I'm a fan of unscripted, raw, live, uncomfortable at times television. I realize, though, that there's going to be a lot of people out there who think you got to go to commercial. It's ridiculous sort of what either, you know, what they're putting Brady through, what they're putting Wolfson through, how dare all those photographers go on the field. I mean, you have to understand, and you guys probably know, if you've ever been sort of in a scrum at the end of, like, you know, a college football championship or an SEC game or a Super Bowl, that's just sort of what it is. I mean, people have all these jobs. They have to get photos, and it's not a very clean and pretty situation. But it was honest, and I like the fact that CBS made the decision to stay there. One, it to me was very interesting and compelling television, and two, as I talked to the producer of the Super Bowl, Jim Rickhoff, about 90 minutes after the game, you know, you're in the truck and you got to make the split second decision. If we go to commercial, we may lose Brady. Now, yeah, you can tape it, but that's kind of awkward to then come back and be like, Tracy Wolfson just talked to Tom Brady, you know, 3 minutes ago. Here's the tape of this while other stuff is then going on live. You never want to leave live in the post Super Bowl experience because you don't know what's going to happen. So I think they made the right call. But yeah, I mean, we have not seen, you know, almost like a 3 minute wait on the field. And you got, I think if you're an NFL fan, maybe I'm crazy here, but like, I think you just got to see things you never get to see. You know, you saw the owner get to the field. You saw Brady embrace who he embraced. You heard some natural sound on the mic, stuff you just never hear. To me, that was pretty interesting.
I always wondered too about time sensitive commercials. If you have somebody who paid for like the first post game ad within a certain time period, if there's pressure on a producer or a director to say, look, we could end up with a make good here if we don't get to the spot when we have to get to the spot.
Screw the corporations, man. Viva la. No, I understand what you're saying. You're right. That's a great question. I probably should have asked somebody that. I don't know what they do, other than I am sure that if that they will get to every commercial that was bought at a certain time. Now, the first post game commercial, I don't think goes for $5.5 million, which is what you get in game. But trust me, it's high fours, I'm sure, because that's still a really, really huge spot, and you're still going to be getting 80, 90 million people in theory watching that spot. So yeah, I mean, you know, the CBS. I don't know, this somebody really like who's really into this, like people like at Ad Age and stuff would know. Maybe when they finally went to break, maybe their break was 30 or 60 seconds longer than they initially anticipated for. But I'm sure they got all the commercials in. But that's a great point. It's another always thing. That is one thing I will say that's always very fascinating to me about the commercials is, you know, you gamble and you pick. You know, these fourth quarter commercials obviously cost a fortune of money. And it's interesting sort of like where these companies decide to gamble, you know, which quarter, because in this game, I don't really know what would have been great. The first three quarters were just dull and boring. And it's not like, you know, it's a 2 minute warning. You were sort of, you know, hanging on to your seats, you know, waiting to see what was going to happen. I don't know if there was a spot in this particular game, maybe outside of the one right after opening kickoff that was, you know, absolutely going to get everybody, or maybe one right before the halftime show, because you do get a lot of casual fans who just tune in for that.
What did you think of the commercials overall? And I don't know if you've read this, and it's just been a report out on, I think, Page Six, but there's a report that Jeff Bezos pulled in an ad after finding out that it had something to do with his affair. Did that affect the overall landscape of what was being shot or what was being aired?
Yeah, this is news to me. I had not seen that. That I just almost wonder how somebody could do that. I mean, I guess you could
Same.
Do it last second. You know, I did, you know, the ads are always me. I'm usually, like, not really focused on that because obviously given what I sort of have to do for my job at The Athletic. But, you know, once again, I thought the NFL had the best ad. That two-minute ad by the NFL was pretty awesome to me. I liked the Game of Thrones tie-in ad. I thought that was pretty interesting. The thing that's interesting now to me about Super Bowl ads, and I think it's smart, is they release so many of them before the game to try to get buzz that the ad itself, while still obviously big, it's the Super Bowl, you get all these ads, it's really now about a longer campaign for these commercials. So I actually, you know, when we were growing up, you know, the Super Bowl commercial, like that might have been the only time, that certainly was the only time you were never going to see it beforehand, and I'm not even sure how many times you'd see it afterwards. But now, because of YouTube and because of the web, you know, some of these commercials now will live forever, and I actually think that's a cool thing. But no, I did not hear that Bezos one. I will say this. I really love the Washington Post ad just because I thought it was cool that somebody spent that kind of money to remind people of the importance of newspapers and journalism. Obviously, that's very self-serving on my part, but I thought it was pretty cool that they had that.
There's still an air of desperation to me. There's a yearning from so many of these commercials, the amount of trying that goes in, and maybe it's just natural because of the focus grouping and because of the money, but to me, there were two kinds. There is nostalgia, and then there's meminess, for lack of a better term. It's saying, oh, look, here's the DeLorean from Back to the Future, and that'll remind you, that'll make you feel like you're a kid, and that'll make you want to shop at Walmart. Or then there's just something they think, what are the youngsters talking about these days, and let's put that in a commercial. It's incredible to me, Richard, that the number of agencies involved. You've got the big skyscraper agencies. You've got the little boutique-y loft space agencies, all evincing a similar kind of desperation.
Well, yeah, and you guys are in Chicago, the heart of ad town. So the one thing I would not do, and again, I'm never going to have the budget to spend this, is I think you are really trying to sort of roll the dice when you get a celebrity endorser in these commercials. Sometimes it works. Sometimes it becomes like incredibly memorable. But if you think about it over the years, I bet you cannot name, you know, more than a handful of people who are celebrities who have been fronting these commercials. But yet a lot of these commercial campaigns have them, and the celebs get paid a fortune. And I don't necessarily think you get your bang for the buck. I always like the commercials where they really are sort of trying to be creative and outside the box. For example, I'll tell you one that I sort of still remember. It's a Volkswagen commercial. You know where the kid dresses up as Darth Vader?
Yes.
Yeah, and he's trying to turn it on, and then, like, obviously they go to the kitchen, and the dad and the mom sort of they turn it on for him, which is kind of cool. Like, that, there's no famous person in that. It's just the actors. It's a great, great concept. Maybe they had to pay a fortune for the Star Wars tie-in. But, like, that I remember. Like, something like that is, like, super cool to me, and I remember that, and it didn't star, like,
Harrison Ford. Right.
Julia Roberts, Harrison Ford, or, you know, if you want to go back to that. I remember when Don Johnson was in some Super Bowl commercial, and like they made the biggest deal about it during like the Miami Vice year. And I was like, it's always fascinating to me how. But by the way, if I was an agent or a lawyer for a Hollywood star, I would be selling out like a madman. The amount of money you could get for these commercials must be unbelievable.
I was reading in your column on The Athletic, Richard, that I couldn't tell if it was just kind of like tire kicking that you'd done about this, or whether there was some real conversation about it, about Bill Belichick having his own show once he's done coaching football. This idea of having the Belistrator on, whether it's the NFL Network or some other places, is there real traction for that?
No, that's Richard Deitch traction.
Okay. All right. Well, I like that kind of traction, too. Yeah, I was interested. I was genuinely interested.
It was asked at some CBS press conferences of the head of CBS. So, you know, and John Jones of Sports Illustrated wrote about Sean McManus, the head of CBS's answers to that. And over the years, I have, including that story I did for Monday Morning Quarterback in 2015, I did a story on the Belistrator and Belichick working for Patriots All Access. So, like, it's been out there, like, wow, this would be interesting. Like, how good could this guy, who's basically a grump in press conferences, be a great analyst? Because obviously he's one of the genius football coaches of all time. So the concept has been out there for a while. But as far as I know, there's no traction. Like, nobody has contacted Belichick to pursue this, because he has not made it clear at all yet when he's planning to walk away from football. That said, and it may be counterintuitive, I actually think he'd be really good. I think he would be – first of all, I think he's more engaging – then he lets on. I mean, how could he not be? And I think as a voice, as a person analyzing football, I think he would just be really, really interesting. Because have you ever seen him on some of the NFL Network stuff that he's done, or even the two Bills when he and Bill Parcells got together for that 30 for 30? Belichick's pretty compelling when he's in the mood to talk and talk long. And so if you could sort of find the right studio show for him, I think he'd be great. But I really just wanted to sort of just find out, all right, you get a guy like this, how much would you have to pay him to do it? And the numbers were all over the map, basically from $3 million to $8 million between the three agents I talked to. So they didn't even have a real firm concept of what it would cost.
Richard, real quick before we let you go, assess the validity of my theory. Tony Romo has made Jim Nance a better football broadcaster in that if you picture him in a large upholstered chair, it sounds like he's sitting forward in his chair when he's with Romo rather than sort of leaning backward and describing the game. And there's an energy, a little bit of frisson there that wasn't there before.
Frisson, love it. Your theory is absolutely correct. I would agree with you 100%. I also think Nance's back probably isn't hurting as much from having to carry Phil Simms the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
He now has Romo. In all seriousness, yeah, I mean, what Romo has done, and Nance, I think, finally sort of publicly admitted it, he has just made Nance, he's providing Nance more passion and more enthusiasm and more, you know, if we're going to use big words, joie de vivre, in terms of just going to work. And they are really close friends. It's not a BS act. They like being around each other. And I think that shows in Nance's broadcast. I mean, Nance is a very conservative broadcaster, great broadcaster, but conservative. And he has been more, in my opinion, loose with Romo than I've seen him in years. And I think that's great. I think I don't know if Nance would have stepped away from the NFL, let's say, like relatively soon, but I guarantee he is going to stay much longer now that he's connected with Romo.
Great stuff, Richard, as always. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Richard.
Thanks for the invite.
That is Richard Deitch of The Athletic and the Fan 590 in Toronto.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.